Good morning.
Good morning.
It's wonderful to be here again. If you're visiting with us, we're so glad to have you here with us. Thank you for taking some of your time on the beautiful central coast of California to come worship with us. We know it's hard to get away from the beautiful California coast and the beautiful weather we've been experiencing this August as well. And come here and join us, and we're so thankful that you have. We're continuing on in a series of lessons today. But to start with, I want to read a story that it might relate to you. You may have had a similar experience in your life, but it's something I just kind of want to read to start us off today. You are sitting across a table from someone with haunted eyes. You nurse a cup of coffee as her story pours out. And what a story. It's hard enough to listen to her life. How hard it must have been to live it. You take a sip to hide the fact that your heart is breaking for her. In the back of your mind, you wonder what you might have to offer that could make a difference for her. You wonder where to begin. Life has not been kind to your friend. She's lived a nightmare you cannot imagine, endured pains that would have finished most folks, yet somehow found the strength to survive. But at such awful cost. All her life, people have used and abused her. It shows in the hardness around her lips and the wounded dog, beaten dog demeanor that she has. She is grateful for your listening ears, but trust does not come easily to her. She's been fooled before. Also, many of the scars she bears are self-inflicted. Scars on her body, scars on her soul. She's made bad choices, taken so many wrong turns. Others may have contributed to the ruin of her life, but honestly, she's never needed much help to accomplish that. She pauses in her story for a moment, and you open your mouth to respond, but nothing comes out. You find that you have no words. Words suddenly seem like such empty things to pour into her wounds. You know listening is the right thing to do. You are happy to give her the gift of your ears, and you feel her pain so deeply. That is also the right thing, to care enough that you are willing to hurt through the hearing. But you also know she needs something more than a shoulder to cry on and a few cliched expressions of sympathy. She needs more than your well-meaning advice or fix-it suggestions or band-aid counsel. She needs something to give her hope. A glimpse of second chances, the possibility of recovery. You realize with a rush of conviction that what your friend needs is good news, the good news. The news of a God who can heal her brokenness and bind up her wounds and create new life. She needs the same news that gives you hope. You open your mouth again to speak, and suddenly words don't seem like weak things at all. So if you were in that situation, what would you tell a friend when you open your mouth? When the time comes to speak, what would you say? Where would you begin? Do you know the news that she needs to hear? Do you know it well enough to tell it to her effectively? Can you answer so nothing essential is left out? So that nothing unnecessary is added in? Do you have a cup of coffee type answer? A clear, concise, comprehensible answer so you can cover what you need to and the time it takes to drink that cup of coffee? Can you tell a good news story? One that excites and motivates? One that has people clamoring for more and asking, where do I sign up? Can you tell a good news story that many of us, can you tell that good news story? Many of us suffer from what we would call evangelistic laryngitis. I know that I do on many occasions. We have largely lost our witnessing voice. Where do we start? What do we say? Perhaps we are afraid to tell the gospel story. We don't like rejection, and so we stifle ourselves. Maybe we think talking about the gospel is intrusive. Better to live the gospel than to talk about it. right? Mostly, I suspect, we don't talk about the gospel because we don't really know the gospel. And that is so sad if it is indeed the case. The most valuable gift we have to give a friend in need, and we may not even know it well enough to pass it on. So, brothers and sisters, we're continuing on in our series of lessons on the gospel on one hand, right? This is a mnemonic to help us remember, you know, in those times, those situations when you're presented with someone who doesn't know the gospel and you want to tell them the gospel. So what do you say? Where do you begin? What are the points that you need to cover? And remember how we talked about we can use our left hand to help remember this. We can start in the center, in our palm, where we talk about God and his purposes, right? Then we can move up to our thumb, where it's creation. And then we go on to the fall. And then we go to covenant, community, the incarnation of Jesus, the cross, the resurrection, faith, transformation, and culmination. So remember how we talked about in our last lesson needing a Goldilocks-like gospel, right? One that is just right, not missing anything essential, nor adding anything not needed either. We also need to know where to start. We can learn much about God from his character, which is what helps define his purposes. Many words are used to describe God throughout Scripture: omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent, eternal, just, wise, infinite, powerful, glorious. But in passage after passage, the Bible affirms four essential characteristics of God. God is holy. God is love. God is gracious. And God is faithful. This message about the character of God is consistent, is the consistent heartbeat that we see in the Scriptures. Unless we believe in God's goodness, compassion, mercy, and trustworthiness, it would be hard to call ourselves Christians. So Genesis 1:26-28. And I'm going to be reading from the Jesus Story Bible. God saw all that he had made, and he loved them. And they were lovely because he loved them. But God saved the best for last. From the beginning, God had a shining dream in his heart. He would make people to share his forever happiness. They would be his children, and the world would be their perfect home. So God breathed life into Adam and Eve. When they opened their eyes, the first thing they ever saw was God's face. And when God saw them, he was like a new dad. "Hey, you look like me," he said. "You're the most beautiful thing I've ever made." God loved them with all of his heart. And they were lovely because he loved them. And Adam and Eve joined in the song of the stars and the streams and the wind in the trees. The wonderful song of love to the one who made them. Their hearts were filled with happiness, and nothing ever made them sad or lonely or sick or afraid. God looked at everything he made. "Perfect," he said, and it was. So when we read about what God has created in Genesis, we see that there's a rhythmic, almost hypnotic cadence to the creation account. It goes typically like this: God said, and it was. And it was good, right? We can fill in the details in those, but we see those three things in almost every creation account. In that cadence, all the universe was formed, all the earth was fashioned, all of life was created. But in the 26th verse of Genesis 1, the rhythm changes. It slows down. Something different is happening in that passage. Yes, God's voice is heard again at this point, but for the first time, he speaks not to the universe to command matter, "Let there be light." Rather, he speaks to himself, almost reflectively, almost philosophically. Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness. The writer of Genesis uses these words in the story of creation like a coffee table in the middle of a dark room. He means for us to trip over that phrase, to stub our toe on these words. He wants us to stop when we get to this point and contemplate a new idea. Image of God. What is that? Where did that come from? This is a defining statement about the nature of human beings and describes the single most important attribute that makes us human. We are bearers of the divine flame. We are the ones who shimmer with the light of God's glory. Right away, when we read these verses about the creation of man, we know something unique has happened. Nothing else in the creation story was made in God's image, was it? Not the sun, not the moon, not the stars, not fish or fowl or furry animals. Only human beings, male and female, human beings. We are the only ones that bear God's image and carry God's likeness. According to Genesis, it's not the size and structure of the human brain that distinguishes us from the rest of creation. It's not our opposable thumbs or our ability to speak. It is the divine spark within us, this image hidden away in our hearts. Right away, when we read these verses, we know something significant has occurred. A rock has been dropped into the pool, and there will be ripples. You recognize immediately a theme has been introduced that will come up again and again, a theme that will have a major impact on the rest of the story as it unfolds. We're just 26 verses into the Bible, just 26, and already we know we're handling something significant, life-changing, powerful. Just to make sure we get the point here, the writer of Genesis hits the idea two more times in the chapters to come. Chapter 5 opens with the words, "When God created mankind, he made them in the likeness of God," Genesis 5:1. In chapter 9, God warns, "Whoever sheds human blood, by humans shall their blood be shed. For in the image of God has God made mankind," Genesis 9:6. What is the image of God? Are we talking about a physical resemblance? Does image mean spitten image? I'm looking out in the crowd, and I don't think it does, right? It's got to mean something else. I mean, human beings, we all look different. We're all unique. But we all have things in common as well. Are we the image of God because we have noses and fingers? No, I don't think so. Does image emphasize that, like God, we have personality and character? We can think and reason and imagine? We are language creatures. We use words to communicate. We are not just flesh and blood. There's a spiritual dimension to our lives. Are these the things we're talking about when we say image? Could I suggest for a second that this image in which we were created means we are shaped for a relationship with God? There is a clear hint of this in our text. In the creation narrative, everything is created according to its kind. Am I right? Right? Plants and trees, animals, fish and birds. For purposes of reproduction, certainly, right? Be fruitful and multiply. But also for purposes of association. Each kind associates with its own. Lives, works together. They communicate. Kinds group together. They herd, they nest, they swarm, they flock, they clowder, they pack, they gaggle, they bevy, they school, they troop, they team, they pride, they pod, etc. But humanity is made according to God's kind. We are in his image and likeness, which means at least that you and I were created to clump with God. We were formed to associate and partner and communicate with God. We are shaped to have a relationship with God, to know God and be known by him, to love God and be loved by him. And as we will see, good company improves bad morals. Those who associate with God will learn to live like God. So what do we have for you to take away? What part of the gospel do you need to learn when you're talking about creation? What is important for you to share when you're trying to share the gospel with others who don't know it? Well, first of all, God and his eternal purposes stand behind the universe, behind our world, and behind life itself. The basic rhythm of creation, next. And God said, his powerful voice goes forth. And it was so. God's word makes things happen. And it was good. What God speaks and what God creates is always good. Human beings were made in God's image is the next thing that we need to remember. They have the divine flame within them. We will come back to this idea frequently in the weeks ahead as we continue through our series. There is one implication of this idea I want to leave with you this morning, and that is that all of us were created in the image of God, each and every one of us. As we will see, that image cannot be destroyed or effaced or obliterated. No matter how broken and failed and damaged one might be, somehow, somewhere, the divine flame continues to flicker in that person. We live in a violent world, and these are particularly violent times. In the last couple weeks, our world has experienced terrorism and hatred and murder and anger. And honestly, these things are still there. They're not new, you know, they keep happening. And it's easy to look at people through the lens of race or gender or religion or political persuasion or failings, through human-made conditions. But I send you out into this world today with the commission to look at people as vessels who carry within themselves the image of God. And that's what really matters. The rest of that, it's just a distraction. It's something Satan's using in this world. He's using what power he has to try to thwart us and our purpose. But brothers and sisters, we're like God. We're made in his image. He's given us what we need to overcome this world. He's given us what we need to share with other people, what they need to overcome this world. So, the gospel on one hand, right? Like I mentioned, we're going through this series. We're trying to understand what are the key points? What are those critical things that we need to remember, you know, when we're sharing the gospel with others? They need that story. We're here in this place, or wherever we travel, wherever we may be. We are the Bible. We are the good news to many people. So what do we say? So we're covering this series to help us remember those things. Remember, we started with the purposes of God, and that he was behind it all. And today we've talked about creation. And we're going to continue on in this series, brothers and sisters. And we're recording all of these lessons. And if you miss one, you can catch them on our website, www.slowcfc.net, if you happen to miss one. You know, and I've given a couple summary points, but I would encourage you to take your own notes as we go through these, to the things that you need to highlight, the things that, you know what, that's a good point for me to make, for me to remember. And if you need to re-listen to the lessons, go to the website, check them out. Our lesson is not much today, but I think it's an important one. I want us to think, spend some time today, read through that creation account on your own. Take 5 minutes, read through Genesis 1. Look at those important things. Something important happened in that 26th verse there. And that important thing is critical to us. It's important to others as well. And it's something that we can use. And we can remember that we have God in us. We have that divine flame. And that's our lesson for today. And if there's any need you may have, if there's any way that we can help you, please come as we stand and sing the song that has been selected.